The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 522, recorded on December 4th, 2018.
Hello and welcome to the 522nd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 355th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Derrick.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
I didn't finish Call of Cthulhu, and we're talking about what we've been playing. I sent it back, but I'm halfway through and I don't know, it just wasn't grabbing me. Maybe at some point I'll complete it when it's like $9. It's one of those games that's going to get discounted really quickly, and you're going to find it on the discount rack for like $9 2 years from now.
Interesting.
It's not bad. It's just, it's full of itself. It's pretentious, though not to the point in which in which the gameplay was bad like Vampyr. It was just, I've seen all I needed to see, and I'm not really interested in seeing where this is going.
Oh, that's a shame.
But at least the gameplay mechanics were fine. It wasn't grabbing me like I thought it would.
Yeah, that was one I was interested in giving a go. I like the look of it.
I'd say play it. It's not broken like Vampyr is. It's very playable. And especially since, you're basically playing an adventure game, you don't have to worry about combat, really, although there are stealth sections.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I haven't gotten to the part in which you really have to attack everything, because the game is borrowing from every single H.P. Lovecraft story there is, which means I'm pretty sure that since it's taking some of its cues from Innsmouth, maybe there'll be hordes of fish people that come out of the ocean and you have to avoid or something.
Yeah, I had been playing the Call of Cthulhu board game, and so, Arkham Horror.
Oh, okay.
And, getting into the idea of Call of Cthulhu, like, even when we were seeing
Arkham Horror is so much more fun than this game. I haven't played Eldritch Horror, by the way, which is the sequel, which actually, it's more of a world-spanning thing, and it's just being, instead of just being stuck in New England.
Right,
you might find this interesting. They've announced a computer game version of Arkham Horror.
That sounds fun. I don't know.
I mean, there's some games that just aren't fun unless you're moving pieces around. But at least you'll be able to play with yourself a lot.
The double entendre. But
Paul's not here, so he's not here to comment.
The appeal of that to me is that, like, I would love to get the Arkham Horror expansions, except for the game board is already humongous, and
there are getting some those Arkham Horror expansions which only add cards.
Yeah, but, like, getting an actual expansion, like, I don't know, like, not the King of Mellow, I think Innsmouth is one of them, and they're, like, entire new game boards that you have to stack on.
Larger, it just makes it a little wider. I mean, the game is already huge. It's not going to make it plunk it. You have to put it on the floor in the living room huge. So if you're able to do the entire board now, there really isn't any reason why you can't continue to. Especially some of them are just islands, and you just put it off to one side.
Hmm.
I will say Eldersign actually has some expansions, but I didn't know that had been released. And Eldersign is basically the die-rolling version of Arkham Horror. I don't know if you played Eldersign. I mean, Eldersign with one of the expansions is actually pretty fun. Because it's space saving because all you're worried about is six stacks of cards and rolling dice. But all the same characters, all the same feel, and they have a bunch of other expansions I didn't even know came out for that game.
Mm-hmm. What I was getting at about the digital version is that it sounds like it would be much less to deal with when it comes to expansions with that one.
Yeah, I'm looking this up just to make sure I'm not saying it. What's it called? You know, like a what's it called? Oh no, there isn't one. Sorry. But I remember reading released. Oh yeah, it is. Okay, so Arkham Horror is getting into video games, and Fantasy Flight, who's the publisher of Arkham Horror. So yeah, they're going to be. There's no release date for it yet, but at least there is a game coming out.
Yeah, the ones that I was looking at when I was interested in getting an expansion for it were Dunwich, and then Kingsport.
Those are pretty good. Did you get the King in Yellow?
No, but I've heard that that's another good one. That's not like a board so much as it is just like it adds new it adds new mechanics that are pretty good.
What it does is it makes the game plonka hard. It just makes it's like the SNK version. So here's the thing about that is that it adds new creatures which require a special way to kill them, and it's really, really hard. And there are masks, and yeah, it's just if you're starting to think that Arkham Horror is too easy, just include the King in Yellow and it'll slap you around.
Yeah, the king in Yellow is already kind of a dick to deal with if you get him as the monster for your game. So,
well, it isn't that. It's just that the expansion adds the mask element, which I just talked about. All it does, though, it only in terms of space, it only adds 160 cards. That's all it does. If you're worried about saving space, it'll you don't have to worry about that. Elder Charter also is only a I'm looking at the wrong expansion. Elder Charter actually has less room too. It requires less room because it's going around the world, so the game board itself is smaller. You know what? The King in Yellow is now out of print.
I liked playing the Mage War card game. That was fun, where you build your own spell book with cards that you cast, and your wizard is out on a battlefield, and you summon up creatures or magical items or spells to throw at your enemy. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've seen it. I never really got into Arkham Horror because if you get into Arkham Horror, you're compelled to buy all the expansions, and then you have to find people who will play with you, and that's the harder part. It's no fun playing with just two people. In order to really get something out of the game, you need five people.
Me and Samantha played it once, and then we played it with a third person, and we had a good time.
I know. Well, if you're really into the Lovecraftian, you know, mythos, then it's really fun. If you really get into it, you start role playing as the character you are. I'm always the professor, because he has high sanity, and he does the mental attacks really, really well. And he doesn't have a physical attack, but I say, I don't care. Arkham Horror isn't for bodybuilders. If you really know your lore, and I put my thing mostly on lore and all that stuff, I'm the person who goes through the gates, because a lot of these stuff that's in there is a lot of being able to do lore roles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, have you ever played Sentinels of the Multiverse?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, if you want to play that, that's a co-op game as well, but it's superheroes versus a villain. And people have really gotten into it. And also, the artwork on the cards are really, really good. They're sort of like Dark Horse graphics, you know. We're not going to get too much into it, but you should try Sentinels of the Multiverse at some point.
Cool.
Anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
Mostly just Minecraft.
Okay. How about you, TJ?
So, recently I got back into playing a little bit of League of Legends just to relearn a character with new mechanics.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure playing it doesn't make you feel dirty at all, does it?
Depends. Depends on the people. So, 3/4 of the games I play, I feel dirty, depending on the people I'm with.
No, just the people who made the game, damn it.
Oh, right. I don't think about, I try not to think about that, and I already have everything I want, so it's not like I'm giving them money at this point, so I feel like I'm freeloading.
That's how I feel about the NFL. I don't watch them, I don't go to their games, I don't watch them on TV, and I don't buy anything that's advertised. Now I just look at the final scores.
Mm-hmm. But, I relearned a character that I have always enjoyed because they gave the character new mechanics. And so I've been like,
well, here's a question for you. Do you like the character because of the design and the character itself and not what it does?
A little of A, a little of B. The character I use is named Lysandra. She's an ice queen, and she's capable.
She's your wife. Boom.
She's capable of holding enemies down while the rest of your team beats them up. So, essentially, I'm the big lunky bully that's just holding them down by the arms while my friends spit in their mouths.
Okay, so it's not. For a moment, I thought you were going to say that she was a mezzer, you know, a group control. But no, she just attacks one person and immobilizes one person, one other player.
She can lock down several people at once.
Oh, okay. But she is crowd control.
Uh-huh. She's serious crowd control. Like, everything she does is built to slow opponents down or lock them in place entirely. And so, like, she's awesome as far... And she has some damage to her if you build her right. Like... Some people have told me I'm building her wrong and I should be building towards her crowd control, but there is a certain balance I've struck where I can use her abilities to really hurt people as I'm holding them down. And it makes for some serious, especially with her new mechanics. She used to have a passive where every 20 seconds, she would not use any mana on an ability. And that used to be a really good way to just save mana and not have to worry about buying mana items. But now they made a thing with her where if an enemy dies near her, she doesn't even have to be really involved in the kill. They'll turn into a ice shade that will slowly walk towards the nearest opponents. Put out an area of effect slow as they're going, and after a few seconds they'll just explode and do area of effect damage. So if you kill one person, they essentially become a ticking time bomb that makes a domino effect of the enemy team.
Have you played Dead of Winter?
I have not.
Okay, that's another board game. It's sort of cooperative. There's a traitor mechanic. Just reminds you, if you get bit by a zombie in that game, that character is going to die. You can try and heal that character by rolling a die, and there's a 50-50% chance that they will die and infect another person. So you have to keep rolling a die. Either you let that character die, or you roll to try and save them, and if you fail it, guess what? Another person's infected. That person dies, and then another person's infected.
Yes, like that, but with explosions.
You know, if you're really getting into Arkham Horror, I say get into Dead of Winter, because that's basically The Walking Dead. And it's so The Walking Dead that almost all the characters are based on characters from the show, just have a slight name change. Except for one. His name is Walter White. He's a chemist.
Was that a special edition add-on, or was that just...
No, he's part of the main... There are also add-ons. I mean, I got the promotional one, which adds Felicia Day to the game. Not a character. No, actually Felicia Day.
That's cool.
We have to ban her because she's too overpowered.
What were you about to say about Lysandra, Scott?
I was trying to say I like your attitude that you want to build it your way, and that there shouldn't be a wrong way to build a character, especially if the game designers have included these ability trees, that it shouldn't be, you know, no option should be, well, that's wrong, you know, it's like, I never liked that kind of attitude, you know, like, it should be this way, because that just seems so boring, you know, like you've made it your own character.
It's like me when I built a priest in World of Warcraft. I did a complete, utterly heal-based priest And people say, no, you need offensive powers. I say, screw you, I'm support. And when I'm support, I keep everybody alive. There's no, I'm not there to shoot at people. No, I'm there to keep your asses alive, and I do it well, and that's my entire thing.
Right. And there's two major reasons that I built Damage Lysandra, the build that I'm using. One is that a lot of people in the, she's a mid laner in the game, and a lot of people in the mid lane tend to favor these assassin characters, these characters like, Zed or Akali that can do a ton of, like, they're good at jumping in on you and doing a ton of burst damage all at once and just taking you from 100 to zero. The issue with Lysandra, with trying to do that to Lysandra, is her ultimate. Her ultimate allows her to encase one enemy in ice, which puts out an area of effect spell from them, which holds them in place, immobilizes them, damages them, and then makes and then does an area effect damage to the area around them. The fun part is that she can also cast that spell on herself to make herself untargetable for about 2 seconds, and she heals while she's encased in ice. So I built this damage style Lysandra with the intention of denying assassins at every turn. And it's worked so well for me at the level I play because people lean on those assassins so dang hard. And nobody really expects that. They just expect to be able to jump in, kill you, and get out and have a good laugh about it. Lysandra is my answer to that, and it's a fun one.
Yeah. So before we get into the gaming flashback, I just want to say I did see a game that's coming out on the 18th called Last Year, The Nightmare. And it looks really, really – it's another game like Friday the 13th and Dead by Daylight. Except in this game, it's a six-player game. Five people are the, you know, are the teens. And the sixth actually has control over three murderers.
Three at once?
Yeah, he gets to pick which one goes on, you know. So he gets to, okay, they're here, so I better use this murderer, you know. And they all have their really. There's some impressive voice talent. Like Melissa Hutchinson is going to be doing voice work for it. Those who don't know, she's Clementine from The Walking Dead. Also nice. Nina Robinson, Michael Johnson, Erica Lindbeck, et cetera, you know. So it looks really interesting, and it looks like they're taking a few, you know, they're refining why the stuff that's in Friday the 13th and Dead by Daylight. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with it. Because the part of this is that the murderer, or the person controlling the three murderers, actually has two modes. One mode is they can see everything, and their job in that mode is to fuck with the survivors' heads. That's the part I like the best, because in the other two games, you're just there to, you know, to chop them up into little teeny pieces. No, one of the modes is you get to screw with the survivors' heads while you're toying with them. They want you to be a troll, basically. So that's the part I'm really interested in seeing how it plays out.
Well, that caters to a certain audience.
Like me.
A certain large audience within gaming.
I'm the person, when I'm playing a single-player game with stealth, I like, in Deus Ex, I like to shoot people with trank darts just to see them scream around wondering who did this to me. Or, you know, just like to fuck with the AI heads, and now you get to fuck with player heads, too.
Well, that's an interesting take on the style. Like, everything that I've seen so far, Dead by Daylight, Friday the 13th, I've seen a couple, Death Garden, they're all just like, hunt down the goodies and kill them. That's it. And that psychological aspect sounds interesting.
So yeah, and the other interesting thing is this actually, the game takes place in 1996 instead of the 80s. So you have that thing going, which tells me, oh yeah, there's Scream going on here too.
Hmm.
If you're going to set it in 1996, you got to think about Scream. So yeah.
I'll have to look that up. That looks interesting. I'll have to check it out. Because, I mean, you know me. I loved Friday the 13th, rip in peace. But, but I would, but like, Until the day when when Gun Media gets the rights back to start working on new Friday the 13th content, I am in the market for something like that. That would be fun.
The other game that I got some information about, which I'm really looking forward to as well, is Chef, a restaurant tycoon game. I am a tycoon addict, and this game is going to do the full tycoon game thing for being a restaurateur, being a chef. Like, you better have a good menu, you gotta have good chefs, you know, and all that stuff. I mean, if you're doing a menu, sometimes you have to, you know, you have to be careful about the, you know, the dishes you have in it. Because, if you have just a random set of food, no one's gonna go to the place because you don't have a theme, you know? I mean, say you want to make a vegan restaurant, you know, so you put all these vegan, stuff in it. And it's gonna be a deep tycoon. And like I said, I always liked tycoon games, even the mediocre ones, like Airport Tycoon. So, that's one I'm looking forward to. We might as well spread this around. Hey, Scott, is there a game you're looking forward to? And please don't say Gathering Storm.
No. I am looking forward to games. I'm looking forward to Tunic. Yeah. I can't wait for that game. I know that's in next year, so that'll be good.
We'll, you know, just to defy it. TJ, you should get Super Lucky's Tale and play that just before you get Tunic.
I do like that game, and I understand his frustration of having to write a walkthrough is probably a lot more energy than he had wanted to put into that game. I think there's some other games, but, definitely Tunic. It's like a Zelda, like game, and it's
with a fox.
You get to, a little fox. And so, I mean, what's not to be fun about that? So,
hey, it's pretty actually, adorable. TJ, are you still enthusiastic for Tunic?
Yes, I am. It looks adorable. Like, it looks like Link's Awakening, but with fox.
So aside from Tunic, is there any game that's coming out in like the next few months that you're really looking forward to?
Resident Evil 2 Remake.
Okay, we know about that. Let's talk about games that are a little bit off the beaten path. You know, I mean, Tunic's an indie game. Chef's an indie game.
Indie games?
Well, I mean, something that isn't, you know, everybody... I'm waiting for Mass Effect 4. I'm waiting for the next Call of Duty, you know.
What is left that hasn't come out yet? That's what I'm trying to...
Well, I'm just thinking of just small games that people may not be aware of.
Right.
What is the name of that one? Hold on one sec. I think it's called, Biomutant. Biomutant looked fun.
Yeah.
Which is done by THQ Nordic, which could be good, could be bad, but if for the most part, it looks like a little action platformer where you create a little, I guess, sort of anthropomorphized chipmunk looking character with a sword. Which I'm for it. I like character creation. I'm interested to see what they do with that.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention THQ because it's not a news item, but THQ Nordic added Carmageddon to its portfolio. So we might see Carmageddon coming back.
That'd be fun.
And, you know, there's always nice to have car combat games.
The Council also came out.
The Council's been out, but they finally released the final chapter, so now you can get the entire thing at once. Okay. So I actually intend to get that, because even though the voice acting is bad, it is going to be some of the worst voice acting you ever hear. We talked about this on the podcast a couple of months ago. It is an adventure game that's an RPG. You know? Unlike, say, The Walking Dead, in which you're basically doing an interactive story, in The Council, it has some elements from Call of Cthulhu in which you put stats into different aspects and it'll change the game depending on what you're, you know, you might be good at talking to people. You might be good at investigating. You know, that sort of thing. I talked about this a couple of months ago. It's a game I'm really interested in, but I wasn't going to get just episode one. I was going to wait until the entire thing was finished, and it is finished, so I'm probably going to pick that up. And, it is really an intriguing game. And it's gotten, you know, above average reviews. So, like I said, it's a game that I was waiting for in terms of adventure games. Because we talked about this as well. You know, adventure games became too much like the Walking Dead thing. Just interactive stories. Your choices have some meaning, but they don't really change the ending. They just give you a different kind of flavor of ending. Well, the council is basically you're learning different stuff with various playthroughs. You know, that reminds me, I have not played it yet, but it is a game I want to play at some point, and that's Her Story. And from what I understand, one playthrough isn't enough to get the entire story. You have to play it a couple of times.
Yeah, and it's sort of a just like a weird outlier where you don't see too many full motion video games anymore.
That's true.
I sent you the link for Press X Not to Die. It's 59 cents on Steam. And that game is actually a parody of the FMV games, and also of it's also obviously taking a lot of pot shots at David Cage.
I wonder what happens if you don't press X.
You die.
Oh. Well, spoiler.
It's a full motion video quick time event game.
There's a mystery game that's been out. I think it's called Contradiction. That's also a full motion video. So that was it's a game where a guy is a detective and he's playing it up like he's Sherlock Holmes. And, you have to find the liar. You know, you compare people's stories, what they've told you, and you find who's lying and giving you, contradiction as the title of the game. Mm-hmm. And you get to the bottom of things by pointing out that they're lying and see if they tell you the truth.
So basically, it's Ace Attorney. It's Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney.
Well, no, you're not in the court.
I know, it's not exactly like that, but that's the entire point, is they're just finding the contradictions. We can't get too deep into this, because we do have a podcast to do. So, there was one thing I wanted to talk about before we moved on. Oh, yeah. So the other thing that we're not going to – is not a news item, but I think we should talk about briefly, is that Sony is not going to be at E3.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for this is very simple. They're going to be revealing the PlayStation 5, whatever it is, in 2020. They don't have anything to show this year that isn't going to be for the PlayStation 5. And when you announce a new console, guess what happens to the old console? No one buys it. Mm. So they're going to probably be back in 2 years, and that'll be the unveiling of the PlayStation 5. Microsoft will be there because even though they're going to do whatever, what is it, Scarlet? Is it codenamed Scarlet for the new Xbox?
I think so.
While they're probably going to announce it in 2020 as well, they're really going to hammer down, look at the stuff that we're working on. You know, all the exclusives, all the first-party games that we're going to be making. So they still have a reason to be at E3.
Mm-hmm.
I will probably not be at E3. I probably will be there for the conferences. Microsoft sends one every year because of my TV show Talking Xbox. But there's really no reason for me to be on the floor anymore. There really is no reason. Now for you, TJ, you'll thoroughly enjoy it because it isn't old yet. You haven't seen how the hot dogs are made yet.
Right, and I'm definitely going to be at E3 next year. I actually know that for a fact. Okay. This time around.
I just have to find a place to stay because I'm no longer to be living in LA anymore.
it's got a growing esports presence, and that works well for what I do for a living.
You know, that's funny because at E3 they always had, but now they're getting bigger. These you'll see them, these stages in which people are playing, you know, against each other, and you have cheering crowds. And it used to make sense when E3 had lighter restrictions on press. You know, if you had a blog, okay, you're invited. But now that they have regular people coming in, you know, they have to pay their tickets and all that stuff, it makes a lot more sense that they would have these exhibitions of people playing esports against each other in a thing.
Right. And it used to just be, like you said, E-League. But this last year, they had the Nintendo Splatoon Championships, the Super Smash Brothers exhibition. They had E-League, of course, but they also but Fortnite had a big ol' hullabaloo. The Celebrity Pro-Am
did, but I think that was 2 years ago. When you were there, they had the Injustice 2 stuff.
Sure. I think that's part of E-League.
Yeah, that's what I meant, though. I mean, well, Injustice 2 was in – was it Injustice 2 that was – that was aired, their championship was aired on ESPN, which surprised me.
Yeah, but Fortnite the Celebrity Pro-Am was huge last year, and it's going to continue to be a thing where, like, the E3 saw how many viewers they were getting. It was a lot, so they're probably not going to pull off the gas on having competition at E3.
Well, I mean, we're going to be discussing Fortnite in the news, so we're going to have to hold off on that discussion. But we will go to the gaming flashback. So this one may prick up Scott's ears. I don't know if he played this or not. But this week's gaming flashback is Unlimited Adventures.
I did play this.
Yeah, so the full name is Forgotten Realms Unlimited Adventures, also known as Unlimited Adventures, or by the acronyms FRUA or UA, is a video game originally released on March 17, 1993 by SSI for the IBM PC and Apple Mac. Unlimited Adventures is essentially a role-playing game construction kit and draws on prior Gold Box Engine games for its content. See, SSI's contract with TSR required the former stop using the Gold Box Engine, so the company decided, you know what, we're just going to release all the development tools and let players create their own adventures using a database of hundreds of different monsters and triggers and maps. The chief feature of interest in this computer role-playing game was the game uses a variant of TSR's AD&D rules in the gameplay. The engine within which adventures are played is based on the Gold Box engine that made its debut with Pool of Radiance. Although some improvements have been made, for instance, the color depth has been increased from 4 bits to 8 bits, despite processing features that today are considered limited, such as a 320 by 200 pixel resolution. The versatility and ease of use offered by the engine have created a community of users who remain active to this present day. The original game allowed players to create dungeon modules, some editing and renaming of monsters and characters, and to import pictures and monster sprites. However, some art, such as walls, combat, backdrops, and title screens, could not be changed in the unmodified game, which was a pain, but I got around that. Those deficiencies have been overcome by a now fairly extensive library of hacks, which allow the designer to change things not changeable in the game out of the box. Other hacks allow the designer to alter the gameplay itself, to create new weapons and other items, to alter spells, and to change other aspects of gameplay. The availability of these hacks have led to the creation of a number of comprehensive quote-unquote world hacks, which allow people to create science fiction, superhero, western, and Roman Empire adventures, among others. A program called UA Shell applies and manages these hacks and enables the players to apply them. Actually, UA Shell was part of the game itself. I remember this because, if you remember, Scott, when it was loading, it would say UA Shell something something. You know, so mm-hmm. it's not something that hackers created. They're just using part of the game itself. The fan-made game design program DungeonCraft, originally called UA Forever, is a standalone program that partially emulates the FRUA engine, but with a greater ease of user modification. More than 700 adventure designs have been created with this game of various quality. Some of the games that were created could compete with the actual Gold Box games. The one thing which Bard's Tale Construction Kit had over Unlimited Adventures is that you could create games with Bard's Tale that didn't need to, that were standalones. You didn't need the Bard's Tale Construction Kit to run them. I'm pretty sure they hacked that so that you can now save, but one of the original pains of Unlimited Adventures is that you needed Unlimited Adventures to play the modules.
I could understand that. I used to play this and play it around with modding of it, but unfortunately this was back in the era before internet, so I couldn't see all the wonderful things.
Well,
that the people
there was internet,
making.
But they were just bulletin boards, and that's how people cycle these things, is just posting on bulletin boards. And then you'd have to get sort of a viral effect, you know. Someone would be a member of two bulletin boards. He'd download it from one and upload it to the other.
Well, I guess for those who were lucky to have the internet back then, that's great. But for me, I didn't. So I didn't get internet until, I don't know, sometime after Final Fantasy VIII came out, whenever that was. It was a while.
They really don't make these anymore. I mean, they do have RPG Maker.
Yeah,
but I would like something simple like this.
I actually had to go and look because I was curious. Do you know RPG, the first iteration of RPG Maker came out 1 year before this? Like, it was...
Oh, I know. I'm just saying, the RPG Maker that's out now is not as good, because here's the thing about Unlimited Adventures and Barcel Construction Kit and all that stuff. They were simple to use. They were extremely simple to use.
I don't know, this thing felt like it had a lot of depth.
It was very deep, but it was also simple to use.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say that, like, this does sound like quite in-depth and quite fun. Like, it sounds like it has a lot of versatility. I'm not going to knock RPG Maker, because I do know of a lot of good games that have been made with that.
I know. But here's the thing. If you'd been playing all the Gold Box games since Pool of Radiance, you know, when you saw something, oh, wait, I can make my own Gold Box game?
Yeah,
that was the thing that really, you know, stoked me. Because here I am, I can make my own. Because when you played the game, it was exactly like playing, you know, a Gold Box game. I mean, I liked Bard's Tale, and I also had Bard's Tale Construction Kit, but it didn't have the same resonance for me. You know, okay, it's Bard's Tale. No, this is AD&D. I would go into my monster manual and change, you know, they had, you couldn't add any creatures. You could only change creatures within the game. So if there were any creatures I wasn't using for that module, I would just simply up and up change them, you know. Okay, I'm not going to have kobolds, so I'm just going to turn this into a Lucrata or something. And yeah, it was very in-depth. And it was very faithful to Dungeons & Dragons too. That was the other thing that
was. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm looking at the screenshots, and there's, like, things that are just completely and entirely different from one another based on what people have made with what kind of tools they had in there. And it's cool to see this kind of variation where, like, you can look at something that somebody did in one set of UA, and then something that's just completely and entirely different than somebody else's version, based off of what sort of creativity they brought to the table. That's super cool, and that's super versatile, and that's really fun to see.
It was even, you know, did the thing in which when you're doing the flavor text, you know, if someone speaks, you could actually make it blue like it was in the old game, so that their dialogue stood out.
Mm-hmm.
And it had triggers, which were fun to do, you know, this. And, you know, I had a cousin who was really into AD&D, and the only person I could actually, you know, here I made a new adventure. Go ahead, try it out. So I had one critic.
Well, at least you had somebody to share the game with.
But here's the thing. I wish they would make, now it's still out, you know, and they still hacked it, you know, but I would like to see this. Cause here's the thing. When they announced, what was the name of that game? You know, the new AD&D, it wasn't Unlimited Adventures or something else, that promised you, oh yeah, you can make your own adventures and all that stuff. And I said,
The Tales of Sword Coast, I think it was something.
No. Actually, I think it was called Unlimited Adventures 2 or something like that. And, it was so complicated to do.
I'll tell you who got it nailed down properly and made it work well. And it's not, I'm not going to say that it's on the level of Unlimited Adventures. You can't like make anything you want to. You're still confined to assets that are in the game or assets that you mod in.
I know,
but
an AOL thing.
But Divinity Original Sin 2 has a great toolbox for making your own adventures. That it's not super hard to use. And there's a lot of stuff that you can do with it.
Yeah. The game I'm thinking of was Neverwinter Nights. And that was a blown opportunity.
Mm.
Here's the thing. They overcomplicated it. You know, when I was doing Unlimited Adventure, it was very easy to make, you know, dialogue, talking with people and all that stuff. In Neverwinter Nights, it was like you had to learn COBOL.
Yeah.
You know, it was so difficult. And I said, here's the thing. User interface, damn it. It exists for a reason. Make it friendly, you know? I did nothing with Neverwinter Nights because it was so depressing. And it was also a game that bragged, well, you could actually be a live D&D person. Well, no. It was just a blown opportunity. Like I said, you know, games like Barcel Construction Kit, Adventure Construction Set, Pinball Construction Set, Racing Destruction Set. You know, all those games, they were simple to use, and they you could do something immediate. Even Suek, which is Shoot 'em Up Construction Kit, Game Maker was also easy to use. It was a little more complicated. Shoot 'em Up wasn't complicated at all. But I was never able to make the deep Xevious clone that I wanted to with it. But, you know, that's my fault. But yeah, I mean, the biggest thing about Unlimited Adventures was it was simple to use, and I didn't have to hurt my brain just to make a simple adventure. And I, you know, just a simple one. I mean, you could just do one in 2 seconds. I mean, I aimed higher, of course. I wanted to make complicated ones.
Yeah, I mean, these games will always be around in some form or another. Somebody was like RPG Maker has been around for a minute.
This game is around still because, you know, people loved it and they keep on, you know, never underestimate the love of a modder, you know.
Sure. And that's what I'm saying, mm-hmm. is that as long as there exists the creativity to do stuff with these toolkits, then somebody will keep developing those toolkits and giving people those opportunities.
Yeah, but the only thing they do now is Little Big Planet and Super Mario Maker. What?
Does the Unlimited Adventures still run, though, on modern computers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They make it work on Windows 10.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, right now, the only things that you have that are similar are just platform and stuff like Little Big Planet and Super Mario Maker, you know, and that's fine and all, but, you know, that's not very creative. All you're doing is creating platforms and putting stuff. No, to do an RPG, you need a lot more than just planning out, okay, well, if he hits this spot, it's going to jump here.
Yeah, but I gave you an example. It's Divinity Original Sin 2.
I saw. I know. But I'm just saying about the simplicity of this one. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Go ahead, TJ.
Okay. Rumor, Starfield is in trouble from Game Watcher.
This is 4chan, so everybody take it with a grain of salt.
Starfield is supposedly in trouble, if insider leaks from Bethesda are to be believed. Even better, according to the same person, Elder Scrolls Blades has recently been delayed because even though it's fully functional, it's not fun at all. It goes without saying, what you're about to read is to be taken with a fistful of salt. But we've got to admit that the story certainly has dramatic flair to it. Fallout 76 is killing us. Quote, it's a shit show right now, said the apparent leaker on 4chan, of course, whose post was got immediately screenshot and posted on Resetera, where it is currently being discussed by people both accepting and skeptical of the subject matter. According to the leak, Starfield has been stuck in a rut for a number of years now, where entire studios are devoted to fixing bugs in ways that Bethesda Maryland never approves of. Space combat does not work in this engine, says the leaker, referring to Creation. One studio made it work in a new engine. It was pretty awesome, but Maryland threw a fit.
You can say a fucking fit.
Something that ought to be noted is that a dev studio is unlikely to develop or begin using an engine that's not approved by the higher-ups, meaning that the lead dev studio would know if someone was attempting a fix through employing a different engine.
Anyhow, you know, there's a reason for that, because when you use another engine, it usually means you're going to have to pay licensing fees. And that's why EA was so hung up on the Frostbite engine, because they wanted to use it for everything, including Dragon Age, and that was a disaster using the Frostbite engine with it.
Yeah, I mean, remember the debacle when PUBG tried to sue Epic for taking their idea, and Epic said, you know, you're using the Unreal Engine, right?
But I'm just saying, when a company says, we're going to use this one engine for everything, yeah, that's usually a straight path to disaster.
There was little good said about Starfield all in all. The story has been rewritten twice, and a whole game's worth of levels and bosses has been made and scrapped. People are seriously asking who is in charge. The leaker says that Elder Scrolls Blades is making progress, but that it is downright awful and dull, and that the cause of all these projects unraveling is Fallout 76. It's causing panic, they said. There's no way of confirming whether any of this is true, of course, and perhaps it'd be best if it was considered a little more than unsubstantiated rumor, but it is undoubtedly true that the shaky release of Fallout 76 is causing at least some amount of disarray at Bethesda.
By the way, for those who don't know, The Elder Scrolls Blades is an Android iOS game, and it was just recently announced that it was delayed to 2019.
I just would definitely take this, like it said, with a serious handful of salt, especially if it's from 4chan and rumors. And honestly, I just find it hard to imagine writing a story twice, redoing it, possibly trying it in another engine.
Oh, are you kidding me? That happens all the time, Scott.
People would get fired. Seriously fired if you're wasting the company's time like that.
Well, here's the thing. It's not the developers who are wasting the company's time. It's the company that's wasting the company's time.
That's... Okay, they're in the same difference then. Employees working at the company.
Well, they're not going to fire themselves. when you have a shit show from the management level, there's nothing really you can do about it except for wait for the heads to roll. I mean, Microsoft was foundering because they kept on listening to Don Matrick, and once they booted Don Matrick finally, then they started to recover. The same thing with EA and John Riccitiello. I mean, you know, we already know that both games are using the stupid creation engine, which has been used since Oblivion. And Oblivion came out over 10 years ago.
Wasn't it Gambryo it was using?
It's called Creation. Gambryo is a different engine.
Right.
But yeah, the Creation engine. And I can see where, you know, it might be fine for doing something like Fallout or Elder Scrolls, but if you're going to try and do space combat with it, it's definitely not going to work. Because we all try to ride horses in those games.
I don't know, it just seemed strange. I was kind of hoping that they were going for something different with the Starfield, because most of their games are first-person action-oriented games. Definitely Fallout, definitely felt first-person shooter, and just, I don't know. So I guess this would be first-person laser shooter. I don't know. I don't know enough about the engine that, or what even Starfield's supposed to be about. I just saw that one shot.
It's in space, that's what we know.
Yeah, it's in space, but, I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can do in space. And with space, so
all we saw was the teaser trailer from 2000 from this year's E3.
That's it. That's all we really know.
So but apparently, it's been in development for years, though. Like it's been available. It's been in development for 3 years.
That's pretty crazy. So I don't know. The performance for Fallout 76 doesn't bode well. And that at least is something concrete and factual. And I don't know about the rest of the stuff that's been said, but, I kind of having dwindling hopes on the quality level of the next two games.
Well, here's the thing. I think Fallout 76 is going to be the death knell of the Creation Engine, which means any projects that are being done with the Creation Engine, if they're not, you know, fully done now, they're just going to be shelved forever. Because you're not going to start up a new game with a new engine. I mean, we learned from Daikatana that's not a good idea. Or Duke Nukem Forever. So I think Starfield is dead on arrival. I don't think it's going to come out ever. You know. And it's disappointing because, you know, I'm tired of Fallout and I'm tired of Elder Scrolls, you know. But if it's just going to be Fallout 4 in space, I'm really not interested.
I'm not tired of those things. I just want them to be, I don't know, good.
I agree with TJ.
Like, I'm not saying that Fallout 76 is entirely bad. I'm not.
I can say it because I played it, damn it.
Yeah, but I know plenty of other people that have played it that have enjoyed it immensely. Like, I have friends that sing its praises to me all the time and tell me that, no, they wouldn't recommend it right now, but they are having a blast with it.
you know, that sounds to me like, well, you know, Final Fantasy 13 is good 25 hours in.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm talking about people that, like, from day one, they were just, like, going out there doing whatever they felt like and having a good time. And, like, I have a friend who, like, said to me, and I quote, I haven't come across any game crashing bugs, and I don't know what I'm missing.
Well, neither did I. I was bored to tears, so. But, you know, like I said, the problem with Fallout 76 is it's going to be interesting to see if they shutter the game, if they're going to allow people to have their own servers.
Yeah, I still don't think they're going to shutter the game anytime soon.
Yeah, that's well, it's rather with company old money, though. Statement.
That's the problem.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah, but okay.
I know what you're going to talk about. It's a pity that, you know, there are games out there that are online that once the developer, the publisher says, well, we're stopping the game. That means you can't play it ever again. Go ahead, Scott.
I don't know. I hope it doesn't mean that Starfield is getting shelved and that they actually come out with something, because they spend all this time working on a product. You need return on that invested time, and so you need to have something. And I hope it's a good quality product.
Without knowing what Starfield is yet, I don't know if I care. I mean, it's like, if Starfield gets shelved, like, I guess to be on the completely, I guess, pessimistic side of it, what was lost? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I do get excited about IPs simply because they're different. Like, when I heard about Dragon Age, I said, yeah, it sounds good. They're making their own universe, you know? It's not Mass Effect. It's something different.
Yeah, but Dragon Age had a great trailer that was scored by with a Marilyn Manson song and everything. So I at least knew what Dragon Age was going to be about. Starfield, we got a 30-second trailer that showed some stars and then a logo, and yeah, that doesn't tell me anything. It tells me that it's gonna that the sky looks pretty, but I can go outside and do that. But I can go outside and do that.
You know, there's going to be a they recently said that there's going to be a Dragon Age 4, and I'm hoping, Jesus Christ, don't do what you did with Inquisition. If I get any more MMO shit like, oh yeah, you got to kill these rams to get their wool, get 10 wool, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to harm my own computer, but I will find some things to harm. By the way, there were
just uninstalled the game.
Well, I already spent my money, though. See,
if
that's
it's that bad.
I got some of my back rewards for Psychonauts 2, though, so I got my t-shirt.
That's good.
And some other stuff. I got the badges, but I have nothing to put the badges on.
Well, I figure you're looking forward to that game coming out, then.
Well, I better be. After the amount I backed it. You know, for the amount I paid, you know, I want Tim Schafer to come over and install the game for me.
Oh.
And he has to sit next to me and be my guide. Instead of doing a Prima guide, I have him sitting next to me, and if I have a question, I ask him instead of the tutorial.
Oh. Would you give him $10,000?
No, but I gave him close. Anyways, moving on to the new next item. Epic launching Steam rival with 88% revenue share for developers. And this comes from some games industry biz. Epic Games is launching a competitor to Steam. The company today announced, and today being December 4th, that it will soon open the Epic Games Store, a digital distribution platform that eschews Steam's standard 70-30 revenue split to give developers 88% of the revenue their games bring in. The Epic Games Store will debut, quote-unquote, a hand-curated set of PC games on PC and Mac, but the company expects to open the store up to more games and platforms throughout the next year. By the way, that's how Steam opened. Because I downloaded Steam because I bought the digital version of Half-Life 2. And technically, I'm one of the first users of Steam ever.
This whole digital thing will never catch on.
The store will offer games built with a variety of engines, but Epic is sweetening the pot a bit for those using its own Unreal Engine that will waive all royalties that would otherwise be due for revenue generated through the storefront. Well, no shit, they have to pay you for the friggin' engine. they're already paying you for the engine, so yeah, it's nice that you're gonna waive royalties for them, because you're still getting royalties, you know, so you don't get double royalties. The Epic Games Store will also have a supported creator program designed to reward YouTube and Twitch content creators for highlighting developers' games. According to Epic's Tim Sweeney, while running Fortnite, we learned a lot about the cost of running a digital store on PC. The math is quite simple. We pay around 2.5% for the payment processing for major payment methods, less than 1.5% for Canadian costs, assuming all games are developed are updated as often as Fortnite, and between 1 and 2% for variable operating and consumer support costs. Fixed costs of operating and supporting the... Fixed costs of developing and supporting the platform become negligible at a large scale. In our analysis, stores charging 30% are marking up their costs by 300 to 400%. But with developers receiving 88% of revenue and Epic receiving 12%, the store will be a profitable business for us. Sweeney also confirmed the store would support mods, free-to-play games, and non-commercial games. It'll also have a 14-day refund period. So, yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why the Microsoft Store was created and the Origin Store created was because they didn't want Valve getting a cut of their DLC. Getting a cut of the game sales, fine, but not the DLC. Which is why Dragon Age Origins you won't find on Steam except for the Ultimate Edition, which contains every single piece of DLC ever released for it.
Yeah, I mean, when Epic is almost literally
drowning in money,
I was going to say printing money. They own the press at this point.
What is it? They own 400. No, they actually went into the billions because of Fortnite, if I remember correctly.
It's a $2 billion. And it's a $2 billion game right now.
Yeah, and here's the thing: 6 years ago, did anybody predict, you know, Fortnite would do this? Because I remember Fortnite being vaporware for a long while.
Yeah, I had no idea. Like once they did the battle royale thing, I thought it'll be popular for like 3 months and then fall off.
And I was the tail is wagging the dog.
Yeah.
What are you gonna say, Scott? I was gonna say I've already. I have quite a number of games on Steam and the Galaxy, Google Galaxies. I'm not sorry, GOG's Galaxy platform, and not to mention a few on Origin even. I don't know if I want to spread yet to another platform for PC gaming. It just feels a little spreading thin, so I don't know.
Yeah, the entire point here is not that it's going to save you money. It's going to give the developers money. That's the entire point, you know.
And I do like the idea of that. As far as like there are platforms out there that are better than Steam for taking care of developers when it comes to putting their games out. I immediately think of itch.io, who a few of my friends have put out games on there, like indie projects, and they give you a Steam code to go with your – they do what GOG does, where you can get the game, the money goes towards them, and then you also get a code that you can use over on Steam.
The question is what kind of DRM Steam Epic Games Store will use, you know? And I'm wondering if they're actually going to go DRM-free, because part of it is the fact that, you know, the way the architecture of so many games are is that you want the community at your site, like Steam Workshop, right? You want the community going to your site, not because there's DRM, but because people who tend to be in a site tend to stay at that site, you know. So people who are in Steam Workshop, you know, they might get another game, but you know, oh, it's also on Steam. I might as well get it here because I'm already patronizing with this other game, and I'm doing all these mods from Steam Workshop, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Which is what I think Bethesda had in mind when they were starting to do all this mod stuff. You know, the mod support was partly so that you would buy the game from them and not from anywhere else.
See, that was my point, is like I'm on Steam already. I'm kind of here on Steam, so I don't know what incentive, besides I guess supporting the developers,
it could be exclusivity. To
go over and buy it. Yeah, there might be. So I'm just saying this is a wait and see for me right now.
It really is. And I can see where you're coming from. It would have to be something like, I mean, it's not like GOG where it's literally like they take old games and make them work on, and make them work on new systems and give you the
games aren't on Steam. So,
well,
you know,
GOG also does new games so like, too. I mean, it's not like they only do old games. I mean, the big thing was that they were selling Witcher 3 DRM free.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But they took a niche that Steam wasn't willing to supply and they filled it.
Yeah.
And Epic Games really does just seem like we're looking to cut out the middleman. And we have the money to do it.
Yeah. We have the game to do it.
They do need more than one game, but yes, they do. They have a very
well, here's the thing. Valve only had one game when they started Steam.
Yeah.
And it was a doozy.
And they're not going to make another sequel for it. I'm trying to figure out why GOG is in French for me.
I don't know.
For some reason, I went to GOG and all of it is in French. And it's doing Euros.
I don't know.
There we go. I switched to the English thing. It's like, it's just strange. That's all. It's like, I went on. It's like, oh, they think I'm French. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. Miori. With this one. Miori announced a second Civ for the Gathering Storm. Civilization VI Gathering Storm will bring us the Maori, who are now the second officially revealed addition to the Civ roster. Kupi will serve as the Civ's leader here. Hey, fine. According to historical Maori legend, he set sail from Hawaii and discovered the land that would eventually be known as New Zealand, and eventually led his people to migrate there. That translates to a unique starting position as the Maori begin the game at sea. The leader's unique ability is Kupe's Voyage, which sets the Maori far apart from other civs. You'll start the game at sea and gain bonus science and culture until you pick a spot to place your first settlement. Once you do, you'll get a free builder, extra population, and additional housing and amenities.
Now, did you see did you see the video?
I didn't see the video, but I like this concept. It's different.
Because it's very strange. Because you start, you start in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the sea, and basically what you do is you just hunt for a place that would be good for you to land, which is why you're getting those bonuses. You're getting the science and culture.
Oh
bonuses
you'll pass a lot of turns, and you'll need a bit of a catch up there.
Yeah,
I like that. It's different, and I like when they do things outside the box and try to reinvented a bit, like they did with Venice and Civ 5. That was also a cool, unique Civ. So it's nice when they do things like this.
Yeah, needless to say, you already get certain texts that deal with sea, like navigation, already.
Right.
You start with it.
So, since you're starting on ocean, sailing and shipbuilding technologies from the very beginning of the game, as well as improved movement and combat abilities for units that have embarked. This ability also gives you bonus production in woods and rainforests, as well as bonus food from fishing boats. The production bonuses mean you'll have a great incentive to sail around and find the perfect spot for your capital, and early bonuses provided by the leader ability ensures you won't fall behind while you're looking. This makes the Maori pretty unique among the list of civilizations and should make for an entertaining new playstyle in the early game. Your unique building is the Marae, which replaces the amphitheater and provides culture and faith to nearby tiles with passable features, in addition to tourism once you've unlocked flight. You'll also get a unique classical era melee unit in the Tawa, which is able to construct the Pa. That's a defensive structure that gives combat bonuses for allied units occupying it. The Tawa have their own bonuses with the Haka War dance ability, which can debuff adjacent enemy units. And that is a pretty crazy dance where they sit there and they make faces at people to scare their opponents.
Yeah, by the way, you can only build these defensive structures on hills, but you can build a bunch of them. And if you watch the video, the leader, Kupe, is very expressive. So he's hopping around all over the place, and even the units are doing it. So yeah, it's also going to be a very fun civilization to play.
That's good. They went into the detail for this Civ.
Yeah. I wonder if Moana had anything to do with this.
I was thinking about that as well, because it just, that kind of sounded like the story that happened where they just kind of, for whatever reason, stopped traveling for a little while, for like, I guess, 100 years or whatever, and then they started up again, and it was just like, we don't know why, they just did, and that's where the Moana story took place, and it almost makes me feel like this is just prequel to that. So that's just pretty cool.
Yeah, but the Polynesian people in Moana aren't New Zealanders. I mean, that's where the Maori came from.
Not yet.
But the Coupe will remind you of Dwayne Johnson's character from Moana.
Oh, okay, good.
His tattoos all over the place. He's overweight. You know, he's constantly has a grin on his face, that sort of thing. When you watch the video, you'll see.
Yeah, I see it. I'm looking at it now.
He has dad bod.
I don't know, he's still well muscled though. I mean,
yeah, I know he's fat muscle.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, so I'm still looking forward to see what they're going to do with the Mayans. You know, that's a question I have. But one thing I like about Civ 6 is that every leader has what you would think is a game-breaking ability. But the thing is, every leader has a game-breaking ability, so it's not a game-breaking ability, because everybody has a game-breaking ability.
I guess you gotta figure out how to use those abilities.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a game-breaking ability if everybody else has the game-breaking ability.
They break it in a different way.
Like, you know, the Scythians, you know, you get two horse troops for every one that you make, you know, so you can spam, but, you know, that doesn't matter, because these people have this ability to counter that, you know.
Right.
So yeah, like I said, this is the second expansion for Civ 6, which probably means it's the last one, because so far we've had that pattern in which Civ 4, Civ 5, and now Civ 6 are all going to get two expansions, and the second expansion is the one that really just nails it.
Man, like, I get nervous about that, because like, Civ 6 started so good, and it's continuing to be better. Good.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I want to move on to another civilization that might have to start from the beginning again and maybe won't hit those beats as well.
Well, here's the thing. Civ 7, if it comes out, is going to be in 2021 or 2022, if we're going to go by the pattern that all the Civs have done since Civ 2. So, you know, the thing is that you're going to enjoy a lot. And the one good thing is that no one's saying you have to buy Civ 7 if it comes out, you know? I know some people who still, and this was on the final polycast with Dan, you know, last week, that there are some people who have not moved on from Civ 5. They prefer Civ 5.
I still play Civ 4.
All right, well, Civ 4 was the one, you know, that I think perfected Civ, and everything else was just leading up to it. Although I will say, Civ 5 added the one unit per tile thing, which I really like. Because I don't like the stacks of doom.
Yeah.
Especially since it requires, especially when they're attacking, you have to wait for 50 units to attack. Even if you took off the animation.
You can turn that animation off.
Even if you take off the animations, sometimes it took a long while just to do it because there were like 50 per stack.
It was instantaneous. When you turn off the animation and do stack attack, it goes boom and it's all done.
Yeah, I still don't like the stacks of doom anyway.
Okay.
I like the strategy of having only one unit per time.
They had a old way of deterring stacks of doom, and if your stack got attacked and one unit died, the whole stack died, and that was in Civ 2, I remember. So that was a way to deter having those stacks, but I guess one unit tile does help to do different strategies.
You sort of have these stacks in Civ 6. It's just that now you just combine two units and now they're a core and then they become an army. You know, you just have the one type of the only thing that is that I really never have still not have gotten really used to the flight units yet in Civ 6. I mean, I know generally, but I never really rely on them. And then again, I'm a turtle player, so.
Yeah. I think I tend to turtle as well.
So anyways, yeah, I mean, Gathering Storm's coming out in February, and I'm probably going to pre-order it. Because it is on Steam. Anyways, sorry. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. And you can find me at Steam at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs on Twitter.
Yes,
and on you Twitter. Can find me at Alpha Shard on Twitter as well.
You can find me on Instagram at Jonah Falcon 1970.
And you can find me on Tumblr, not at all, because that place is dying.
Yeah, people want their porn back. Here's our porn! Stop saying that this anime character who's in a dress is naked. She's not naked. She just has big boobs.
Well, there's lots of stuff that's being tagged as adult that is.
Yes, like even a vase with flowers in it.
Yeah.
I guess that hourglass shape and those flowers are too sexy for the bot.
Pull up the tents, everybody.
The flowers are just asking for it.
Pull up the tents, everybody. We're going back to Zanga.
Well, you know, the Russians took over LiveJournal, so we can't use that anymore. Actually, it was because the Russians took over LiveJournal and were banning all the racy stuff was the reason why people went to Tumblr in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I want to see your hentai, TJ, on Tumblr before it gets tagged. Anyways, we will see you next week, and we will be talking about the next civ that they show off. We've seen Hungary, we've seen the Maori, now, I'm going to guess the Mayans, simply because they were prominent in the trailer.
It's probably a good guess.
Let me ask you a question. Of the ones that are rumored, or ones that were not announced, is there a civ that you're hoping you see?
Do we have Korea?
Yes, we do have Korea and their turtle ships. We do not have Venice. We do not have Portugal. We do not have Mayans. We do have Incans.
Well, I am looking forward to the Mayans wanting them back in the game.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with them.
Actually, I don't think we have any. We didn't get any Native American.
Oh yes, we did. The last one from the thing was Poundmaker.
Oh, that's right. That yeah.
From the Cree. Okay. We had the Cree. It's not
okay.
We may get another African nation, and we might get another Native American nation. We don't have the Comanche for one. We don't have the Apache. Do we have the Apache in Civ 6?
I don't think so. Civ 5 maybe, or who did we have in Civ 5? We had two of them in Civ 5.
Oh, we do have the Apache in Civ 6.
Who is Mansa Musa? What was his Civ's name?
Oh, that was Ethiopia. No.
No, Mansa that's Musa?
No. No, that was Haile Selassie.
Okay.
But anyways, yeah. You're not playing Civ 6, are you, DJ?
Not right now. I'm not.
Are you waiting you're waiting for the inevitable gold edition, which contains everything?
Yeah, I mean, like, at this point, they've put out a lot of new stuff, and I haven't gotten into any of it, so I might as well wait until there's something that has pretty much all the expansions, right?
Yeah.
Oh, the Apache are not in Civ 6.
I was actually looking at that. The only thing I can see is that the Shoshone were in Civ 5.
Weren't the Shoshone in Civ 6 too?
I feel like it was.
Let me see. In Civ 6, we have the Aztec, we have the Cree, and we have the Mapuche. Okay, the Shoshone were in Civ 5, you're right. The Mapuche, the Cree, and the Aztec are currently in Civ 6. Which means they'll probably be joined by the Mayans. But, you know, here's the thing. When you say Native American, they talk about the entire Americas. I tend not to think of Mesoamerica as part of Native Americans.
Right. Think of the northern ones versus the Meso.
Yeah. So it'd be nice to have another, because we have two Native American tribes. I know there was one Native American. It was either the Apache or the Comanche who were really militaristic.
Okay. The Comanche were a more warlike tribe.
Anyways, we will see you next week with another Civ.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.
Happy civving, everyone. Yeah, I still want to see how grievances work because, you know, here's the thing. Fuck warmonger penalties. Fuck them to death.
Yeah.
Bring the grievances. Let's see what happens with those. And we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.